The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning. You're joining We the People Radio with Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, and Bob Martin. We are at KCNR 1460, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media. Jump on our chat room at wethepeopleradio.us. It's usually alive and well. And call us.
We haven't gotten that far yet, though.
No, we don't know that for sure because we're still plugging our computers in. But give us a call at 530-605-4567.
I get the phone plugged in.
Yeah. We're all running just a little fast this morning.
Just a hair late.
Yeah, and
I didn't get a ticket though today.
And I'm looking at Aaron, and neither one of us has any makeup on, so that tells you something.
It's a good day.
Neither does Bob.
We have faces for radio.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, neither does Bob.
Late night last night. I don't know about. Aaron or Elizabeth, but I was at the Rat Pack show last night at
that's
Civic
supposed to
Auditorium.
Be fun.
Oh, it was very delightful, very entertaining. They did a really great job.
Yeah.
Nice.
I was fishing my niece out of a pool.
What? You don't have a pool.
I know.
Okay.
It was someone else's pool.
Is there more to the story?
It was someone else's pool, yes. Mm-hmm. We were at a fundraiser.
Oh, yeah,
and,
forgot about that.
And since I have kid duty this weekend, I decided to take two of the munchkins with me to, you know, I introduce them as my conservatives in training. And so then we went next door to the
sounds
neighbors.
Sounds so much nicer than hostages.
I know. Yeah, there you go. And I went next door to visit the neighbors who had kids the same age and had a real nice pool with cover over it. And some need to challenge, and so one of them.
It looks so trampoline-like.
Yes, it did look like a trampoline, so we had to fish her out, but she's good. She's here with us this morning.
Nice. I was down at the 100-year anniversary of the Corning Volunteer Fire Department.
Nice.
Congratulations, Corning.
I'm a big fan of everything volunteer. I really am.
That's cool.
Because you're doing it for the right reason.
Check it out. They had the oldest chief there.
How did you score an invitation to that?
I had
part of your job.
I had to actually stand behind a guy who gave the big resolution. Bob Williams is running for the assembly down there, so he handed the big resolution to the guys and made the little speech. And so Jerry from Jim Nielsen's office and I stood behind him, and the guy looked at me at my table. He goes, "You came all the way down here just to stand behind somebody." It's like, hey, look, sometimes we're in the front, sometimes we're not. Don't worry.
Got to do what you got to do.
It was pretty funny. So then we went over
it's a dirty job, but somebody's got to do it.
Exactly. Yeah. Then we went over to, they had the oldest chief there. That's what I was going to tell you. He's 90 years old.
Wow.
You know, I guess if you're a fire chief, you live a pretty long time, I guess. He looked pretty spry.
That's cool.
I had no idea the guy was
90 years old.
Yeah, he was 90 years old. It's pretty cool.
Does he still volunteer?
No, he just goes to the dinner when they turn 100 years old, I guess. I don't know. He was at a different table. I didn't get all the intel. But then I went over to Relay for Life at the Corning High School.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is that time of year.
And that was interesting.
Yeah. Have you ever been to one?
It was always at the track out in Palisadro.
Yeah, right.
But it was a zoo.
Right.
So we'd drive by, we were like, doing that again.
Pretty fun. I've done it a few times.
The old Bishop Quinn.
Yeah.
Track.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I've done it a few times. It's pretty cool, actually. And, you know, the thing that was really interesting is a couple of the years that I did it, you know, us older folks stayed up all night and the young ones all crashed and slept through the night while we were out walking the track at 3 a.m. It's kind of interesting. I guess they need their sleep. They're still growing.
I guess ours is coming up in
June.
June, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you gotta like it.
Yeah. So today we're gonna talk about Soviet Union, which is kind of interesting because my sister-in-law immigrated to the United States legally. I want to point that out, legally, from the Russian area,
the land of Russian.
Yes. So I actually went to Sacramento with her when she took the oath and was declared a legal United States citizen. She worked hard for it.
That's cool. Yeah. It takes a long time. How long did it take her?
7 years. She knows more about how our U.S. government functions than most people that were born here.
Nice.
Yeah. Which is kind of cool. Sad, but cool.
Well, You know, it's like anything else when you learn it when you're a kid.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times you just...
Yeah, you just kind of
I don't know
off.
About you guys, but some of us were goofing off in school.
Yeah, I know. I was pulling the pigtails of the girl in front of me.
You were the pigtails.
Yeah.
All right, I'm looking. I'm trying to get our page pulled up here. Having a very slow computer connection here.
This gentleman that's going to be coming on, I was reading the article that was written, you know, through him, I guess, and it's really interesting because the thing that he says is, and he's got a quote, and I believe it goes something like this: "Happy people are free people." Did you read that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of sums it up a little bit. He talks a little bit about his impression as a child being in a socialist country, and if you are brought up that way, you don't know any different. But as you become aware of your world, you start realizing that something's not quite right. And all he knew is that he had to be quiet and he couldn't give opinions and talk politics. I mean, everything had to be on the QT. If you were going to say anything, you could not say it in public. Or you went to the slaughterhouse. I mean, that's what it says.
We wouldn't have made it.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have made it. Just, I don't know how you do that. He said he does talks about all sorts of things. Federal Reserve. Mm-hmm. He said he told them one time, he was talking to a big group, and it was a line that sort of stuck with him, and he said, "I come from where you're going."
Oh.
And it was kind of like, eh. And then he said, really, unless you change some things.
And, you know, who can see it better than somebody that came from there?
Yeah.
Somebody who's lived through that. Who can see it better? It's scary.
Well, Big Bob, are you ready to take a quick break? We'll take a little early break.
I have Arcadi on the line if you want to say hi to him.
Stop it. How'd you do that?
Oh, it was easy. He called me.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, so I wrote it on my notebook to push over to you so you could call him, and then he magically called us?
But I called him back just to make sure we have good audio and that he doesn't have to pay for the call.
So. Nice.
So that's what you kids were doing over there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Look at you.
Yeah, we were exchanging foreign policy views.
Do it on the air, Bob.
Did you get that all straightened out?
All right. Arcadi, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Good morning.
Ooh, we can hear you really well. That's awesome.
Now, where are you calling from?
From my house.
And where is that?
He's in Los Banos.
In Los Banos.
Okay.
We kind of all fly in here at the last minute, so we don't get a chance to exchange a ton of information before we start.
That's what happens when it's early Sunday morning.
So we've got a couple minutes before we take our first break. Where did you decide we were going to start today?
Are you asking me?
Yes, I am.
Oh.
Oh, it's up to me.
I thought that we'll just flow wherever the river will take us.
All right, we're good with that. Give people a little sketch of where you come from. You know, a little bit of your...
Well, I came from former Soviet Union. I've been in this wonderful country of ours for 33 years. And... I've done several radio interviews. By education, I'm an engineer and an architect, and unfortunately, I had to retire due to economy, but probably I will go back in the saddle because retirement stinks, in my opinion.
Why?
So I'm occupying my time talking to wonderful people like yourselves and attending to my... other things, like two beautiful German Shepherd dogs, my wife, my children, my grandchildren, so I'm having fun.
There you go. It's not a total loss. And sometimes sometimes the silver lining is that we go back and we kind of focus on the things that are really important, like wives and grandchildren and pets.
Yeah, and... they were taking good care of me for the last several decades, so... Mm-hmm. I'm a lucky guy.
Well, you were busy working.
Pardon?
Well, you were busy working.
Yes, when I was busy working, and I'm extremely fortunate fortunate of leaving the former Soviet Union, fortunate coming here, fortunate living in Europe and working there. Meeting my wife, marrying her, having my own business for 28 years. Life was good to me. Let me knock on wood.
We heard that.
Yeah.
Hey, tell us how did you wind up leaving, or why, or how did that work? Was it a difficult thing, or was it just paper?
As you're looking back, it doesn't seem like a very difficult thing. At the time, it was quite an ordeal. And the decision was a slow one, because when I was a kid, I never thought that I will live in the West, and I will not return back. Even though I was going back in between 95 and 97, I did a couple of big projects in Moscow. But they invited me back. I was so surprised. And I never thought of that. It's like living in prison. You don't know when you're a kid that you're living in prison. You absorb the surrounding like normal.
Sure, it's just your life.
You look at the... Yeah, it's a life, and you accept certain things from your childhood and brainwashing and propaganda and other good stuff. And after you start questioning certain things, that's where you starting to notice that there is something wrong with that picture. And still, I was Russian through and through, and even though I have this observations and thoughts, and then when I joined the workforce, I realized that I was not alone, that the majority of people thought the same way I did, but everybody was afraid to voice their opinion because in that land, everything was ruled by fear. Fear was a major component. And therefore... you start reading certain things that are not allowed. You can listen to radio at the areas that are not jammed, meaning that the Russian authorities were jamming any radio program that was broadcasting in the native language, and especially in the big cities. So I was born and raised in Kiev. So in Kiev, you couldn't listen to Voice of America or BBC radio or any other radio, for that matter, that would broadcast in Russian. So the way I discovered the BBC radio was in my aunt's house. It was a little shack on the riverbank, but it was located outside of the city. It was a couple of hours ride on the riverboat down the river. And that was the time when I would go there for my summer vacation, taking my books and my little radio. I was able to listen to jazz music, to Duke Ellington Band and Dizzy Gillespie, Ella Fitzgerald, laying on a stack of hay looking at the dark night sky. It was quite a discovery for me when I was discovering that, hey, there is some difference of opinion and there is some different life out there. So it's a slow process. It's a very slow process. And basically, I was able to leave because of President Nixon and Henry Kissinger, who came when I was in the military. And I remember I was in my full uniform in the barrack reading the newspaper, and I noticed a little kind of insert telling me and the other readers that the President of the United States and Secretary of State came to negotiate the SALT II Treaty. I didn't know at that time how profoundly that visit will affect my life.
When we, how about this? Let's take a really quick break, and when we come back, you can tell us more. Otherwise, we'll have to take all of our advertising breaks all at once, which will be too long. So we'll be back with you in 2 minutes. You're listening to We the People Radio here on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
From Russia with love, I'd fly to you, much wiser since my goodbye to you. I've traveled the world to learn I must return from Russia with love.
The hotline is open on KCNR 1460, 530-605-4567.
You're a fine America, there's a growing feeling of hysteria, conditioned to respond to all the threats and the rhetorical speeches of the Soviets. Mr. Khrushchev said he will bury you. I don't subscribe to such an ignorant thing to do if the Russians love their children too.
Robert, is that Sting?
That is Sting.
Ah, good choice.
I haven't heard that in a long time.
I know.
I like that song.
I love that. Welcome back to We the People Radio. Hey, if you want to know what our guest is talking about today, you can find out all information about him on our webpage at wethepeopleradio.us. Robert does a fabulous job of keeping us up to date almost momentarily when we're on the air. So if you are confused about what he's talking about or where he's going, check out that webpage at wethepeopleradio.us.
Okay, so we're back. So, Arkady, I'm dying to know. You kind of wind up living in a bubble there, so you figure out that there's kind of life outside the bubble. And what was your first clue? I mean, were you a kid, or were you a young person?
When I was a kid, I was a son of an architect, and my mom was working in the factory, being an engineer, and we lived in the two-room rooms apartment in old area of Kiev, and I remember talking to my our grandparents were living with us. Our apartment was a communal apartment, meaning that there are several families living in that communal apartment, sharing one restroom or one bathroom, and sharing the kitchen. And that was the life. And I remember the story of my grandfather, who was telling, my grandfather was an illiterate shoemaker who couldn't read and write, but he was by far the wisest man I ever knew. So I listened to the stories that my grandfather used to occupy before the revolution the entire floor of that building, working by himself, and my grandmother and my grandfather and their children lived in that humongous apartment, and the basement of that building was his shop, where he had all his tools and machinery and stuff, and he was able to support the entire family of 12 working by himself. That was the first clue that life before the socialist nirvana was kind of different. And also, when I was about 6 or 7 years old, I was told that I couldn't talk freely on the phone. That talking on the phone might, without certain precaution of not saying things, might have some consequences. This kind of stuff. And then you realize that you cannot ask certain questions when you join the school. And I remember I was told about it by my father, my grandfather, simply because my father was a highly decorated combat veteran of World War II. And he was in charge of the industrial construction of the Republic of Ukraine. Ukraine is about twice as large as the Republic of France. And so my father lived in the trains and airplanes. He was seldom home. And I would like you to comprehend the position that my father held and the tiny little room that we were cramped in. That's a social reality, socialized reality. And even though my father had thousands of people subordinate to him, life is different. And everybody's equal in misery. But that's what my father did. And I was told that if I will ask any political question in the school, it might have some consequences to my father's career. So I remember the first time we were studying the Great October Socialist Revolution, and we were told that it was a spontaneous revolution, that the workers of the world, or Russia, united, and there was an uprising, and they armed themselves, and there was an army that called Red Army, 10,000 people strong. So I came home and I said to my grandfather, I said to Grandpa, I was learning that the Russian army was a spontaneous house. The uprising begins spontaneously. How can it be? And he told me, that was my first lesson in economics. He told me there is no such a thing as spontaneous uprising. I said, how? Why? He said, well, 10,000 soldiers, huh? I said, yes. So, 10,000 meals a day, at least? I said, yeah. So, how much do you think a meal for a soldier would cost? Let's take a number. I said, well, maybe a ruble? I said, and he said, let's take a ruble. So, 10,000 rubles. At that time, 10,000 rubles to me and to anyone was an astronomical figure. And then he continues, and then every soldier needs a weapon, a rifle. A rifle has to be fed with cartridges. And then they need a portable kitchen and a railroad to transport the army units and the horses and the hay and some other equipment. And I exclaimed, so who pays for all that? Mm. He said, now you're thinking.
Yeah.
That's
not so spontaneous anymore, is it?
So everybody at that time lived somewhat a double life, because you talk about things at home that you will not dare to talk outside of your house. And Bolsheviks did a great job of brainwashing people, instilling fear in them. And they were trying very hard on the inset, on the beginning of the 20th century, to destroy the family. They were able to destroy the church, but they really were defeated in trying to destroy the family, because the family is the last bastion of the human being where he can escape from any reality to. And any kind of socialist paradise movement, starting from Nimrod in the Bible into today, the first common thing that you will see through history and geographical location of countries, that when you have this socialist movement, or the so-called movement, the first thing they're trying to do is to destroy the church and the family. That's the first thing because that's the first time, the first thing that they do. And that's, I thought to myself, okay, that's the reality of our lives. So I had friends, sang and played music, and I enjoyed camaraderie and a lot of good stuff, because even in prison you can have fun. You don't know that you're in prison, but you're having fun with your friends, and you gathering with your family members every Sunday. It was a tradition at my grandfather's apartment, meaning in our apartment. The rest of the family will gather and we will have a sit-down dinner and everybody would crack jokes. So that was the life. And then you start to realize, like in Orwell's book, An Animal Farm, that we are equal, but there are some of us that more equal than others. And you start to see that certain party bureaucrats live a little better and their children go to a different school. And especially when I had to enter college because my grandfather was very adamant of all his children having something that he never had a chance to have, which is being literate and go to college. So I didn't have any choice. And I had to prepare because there's some entrance exams that every youngster has to take in order to get into college. And there were quotas, and there were lists of people that who could get into college and people who could not. They would divide the population by their ethnical background, their religious background, party member affiliation versus no party member affiliation. Then as older one gets, the more and more you realize that what you experiencing is the prison-like tyranny. And tyranny is something that deprive a person for its dignity, identity. Everybody has to be equal like bricks in a mortar versus stone. So if you are not compliant with certain ideology, then you're not a good person. There was, I believe it's a dynasty of Thing that the emperor, the last emperor of that dynasty, who was a weakling in China, decided to determine who is loyal and who is not. And then they brought a deer into a courtyard, and the emperor said, "This is the horse." And they were watching. If anybody would say, "No, this is a deer," he was not considered to be loyal and was executed. So everybody was, who was quote-unquote loyal, was talking to the emperor and referring to a deer as a horse. That's kind of similar things that happening when you have a collective versus individual. And our founding fathers knew that, and they established this wonderful country on the basis of individual freedom. As soon as you say that you have to be subordinate with your freedoms to a better life for the herd or for the collective or society, when you insert the things called social justice, when you start talking about a bright future, but we have to tighten our belts today, that's the beginning of slavery. And I do lecture quite a few times on the difference between slavery and mentality of a free, why it's such a difference. And that's the only thing that I'm concerned of losing, because if you lose your ability to think as a free man and behave as a free man, then everything else is lost. It's just, and a lot of people are buying into this philosophy that spread like a wildfire in 19th century. We call it Marxism, but it was the same mentality before. We experienced it in this country when pilgrims came on shore of our wonderful country, and they were practicing socialism with rationing and other good stuff. And they then realized, after 90% of people perished, they realized that the socialism didn't work, and they became capitalists. And it took them 200 years to create a document called the Declaration of Independence. So it takes time. After you lose your freedom and lose your ability to think as a free man, it takes generations to regain that ability. And that's why Reagan said that the time frame between the freedom and slavery is one generation. And that's not the fact that nobody takes Obama seriously, what he says. But the frightening thought is that a lot of people accept that and applaud it and think that it's just a wonderful thing. And that's a philosophy that spread like a wildfire because of several reasons, and I can elaborate on those reasons, but it's an easy sell, that's what it is. If I come to you and I say, you know what, you're great, you deserve that, it's your right, and in exchange, I will give you all that, and in exchange, you have to give me your freedom. I'm not wording it, because you might have some second thought, but that's the idea. It always takes two to tango, one who is dominate and one who is subordinate. And we are all sometimes playing this devilish dance. If people don't want to be subdued and enslaved, then they cannot be subdued and enslaved. So there's two willing participants, and that's always been throughout our history, that there are certain people that would like to dominate and certain people that are willing to subordinate because it's an easy sell. You subordinate your freedom for security, and like my grandfather used to say, the cow in the stable is very secure. It provided everything, the meal and go in the pasture and stuff like that, but the cow doesn't have any freedoms, and eventually it's killed. So some people making a choice.
So really, the cow's just being fattened up while it's in the barn.
And on that happy, yeah. On that happy, what a great segue. I'm kidding, but okay. We have 2 minutes to pull our lives together here. We need to take a quick break and thank our advertisers. We'll be right back with you at We the People Radio here at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
Welcome back to We the People, and our hosts, Aaron and Elizabeth, return with Arkady Faktorovich.
Nice save, Bob.
Very good.
Very nice.
Hey, so I just wanted to jump in real quick and just thank our guests for being with us today. You know, this transformation from a free society into one of socialism doesn't happen overnight, and I just want to thank him very much for the great picture that he's painting on what it looks like when it starts to creep in and take over your society. So really appreciate it.
Well, you hear it a lot that, oh, you know, we're, you know, all this stuff is socialism, but at the end of the day, what do we know about socialism? I mean, well, we know what we read in a book.
Yeah, but who knows it better than somebody that lived
it? That's what I mean.
So I really, really appreciate him coming
on and
doing this. So,
Arkady, what do you see? Like, when you know, you've been here long enough, and you obviously came from, so what was that? What did you tell me yesterday? I came from where you're going? Is that it? Uh-oh.
Sometimes what I when I do lectures and I occupy a lot of my time trying to scream on every corner about how wonderful this country is. So I start, especially when I appear in front of young people. I did two lectures in college, two colleges, And I start usually my presentation with this phrase. You're looking at an individual who came to you from your future. And normally, if there is any kind of a commotion in the audience, it's quieting down and everybody is listening. And it's you can hear a pin drop. And I continue, if you are not going to do anything about it, then the future is not that far away. And then I go into explanation what the socialism is all about, what its progressive movement is all about, Fabian socialism, any kind of ism that basically equates to tyranny. And a lot of people in this country work day and night trying to enslave us and trying to change this country to something that it was never intended to be. And it's a slow process. And it's not a coincidence that Moses took 40 years to walk Israelites in the desert, not because they were lost, simply because they wanted to get rid of all the remnants of slave mentality. Same thing with our pilgrims who came to this shores of the United States or America at that time. And they lived here and struggled for over 200 years until our founders wrote this magnificent document called Declaration of Independence. There is nothing like that existed before nor after. And even on the onset of that process, we had two totally different viewpoints of the world. One was Jeffersonian world, and another one was Hamiltonian world, that was two totally opposing, where Jefferson was for individual freedoms, Hamilton was somewhat, in the Federalist Papers, he was very ambiguous, but if you read that, you can see that he was very much pro-British rule of law, and it's amazing that it took only 200 years for pilgrims to running away from British ground, and here was an attorney, a lawyer, Alexander Hamilton, who was a bright individual who saw the future of this country similar to the British rule of law, meaning central banking, progressive taxation. It was totally different. And even though he was killed in the duel, he's the one who created the situation where we, as a result, living in the Hamiltonian world today. We're not living in the Jeffersonian world, which the world of representative republic, abundance of freedom. John Adams used to say that the freedom of individual can be supported only by freedom of commerce. And you can see how commerce is not free today, that in order to open a business, you have to have a license, you have to have all kinds of rules and regulations that you have to meet. And it's very difficult to be in business nowadays. It's not something that was envisioned by our founders. So right on the get-go, you have two different worlds, and unfortunately, Hamiltonian thoughts prevail. We have a judicial system, which is kind of not free either, and we have unelected judges who are making policies from the bench. So all of this started long ago. And then, to like a cherry on the cake, we had 1913, where the last vestiges of the state powers were taken away by 17th Amendment and the ratification of the Federal Reserve Act in December of 23rd of 1913. 1913 wasn't a good year for our republic, and that's the time, I think, and that's my personal opinion, that we lost representative republic and substituted it with the popular democracy. And democracy always slides into tyranny unless we do something about it. And that's the hard part. But we cannot bitch and moan about what happened 98 years ago. We have to do something about it, and to do something about it is to get involved, in the local policy, politics, get yourself into planning commissions, city councils, school boards especially, because without public participation in the local politics, I don't think we have a prayer. But I'm optimist, and I believe that we are going to overcome our difficulties simply because look around and you can see the development of a Tea Party movement as a result of what is happening with our freedoms and our lives and our monetary system and all other things that are happening around us. So I have great hopes. I think that we'll do well. So, what can I tell you? It's just when you come from the hellhole I came from into this wonderful nation, it's like coming from a black and white movie into color.
Wow.
Where you see a lot of things that are totally, totally different. And it's very easy to get used to freedom. It's very easy to get used to this lifestyle style. And when I came to this wonderful nation in 79, I found a job on the second day of washing cars and pumping gas for $2.15 an hour. And I was making approximately, as far as my buying power, I was making about nine times more than I was making when I was a full-fledged engineer in my old country.
Wow. It's like back to the paper route.
Because I came to this country with $68 in my pocket, I could only afford to live in the project. The city was Houston, Texas. And life was different. But even in the project, I start being amazed of how people live. That you have two bedrooms, one bath apartment with running water, hot and cold. The government gives you food stamps. You go and you drive the cars that the regular Russians could only dream of. The communal apartment that I was growing up was smaller than my garage here in Los Banos.
Wow.
And yet, we were living, five of us, in that communal apartment. So things are started to be appearing in a little different light when you experience them. And but before that, I wanted to mention that I came to this country legally. I didn't have any exciting stories of jumping from the ship, swimming across the ocean, fighting with sharks and all other stuff. Because of the Kissinger and Nixon, when they came to Russia, to this day, I don't know what those two men offered the Russians in exchange for letting some people go out. I never could read the details. What was the deal? Because the part of certain people emigrating was part of that Seoul II treaty. And at that time, I was in the military, Soviet military, and after my discharge, I had to wait 5 years until my military clearance was expiring. And at that time, there were certain people already who were leaving, and I remembering talking to my father, who was dying. I asked him, I said, "Dad, do you think it will be okay for me to leave?" And he said, "Yes, I will support you." And after he passed away, 5 years after my discharge, I filed the papers. It took me a year and a half to wait, and so-called experts in the field were telling me that I will never be able to leave, that I am going to be denied. And in my workplace, I was called a traitor, the enemy of the people. I was expelled from the trade union, and even though I was an engineer, everybody member of the trade union in that world. And eventually, I end up in a little small town called Chop. It's a border town between Ukraine and Czechoslovakia, and I will never forget that time. I came early in the morning. There was a gray mob on the platform, probably several hundred people, thousand maybe. And you had to wait in line. The line was long. It was exhausting. And they start letting us into custom for checkout late in the evening, about 7. And I was young and stupid at that time. I had only a small briefcase with two books, two reference books in mathematics, my slide rule, and a couple of underwear change, and that was it. I didn't have anything, because when you're young, you kind of think positive that you can overcome.
Yeah, it doesn't seem important, does it?
Yeah. So, and I was let into this custom room with two families in front of me, and there was a very long and polished bar about 4 feet wide on one side of the room. Behind that bar were three custom officers, and I was behind, so I was the last at the edge of the bar, and the woman officer asked me to empty my pockets and put everything on the bar. They opened my briefcase, and she said, "What kind of profession you were practicing?" I said, "I'm an engineer." And she said, "Oh, that explains it." And then I realized what she was asking me. Since doctors, lawyers, and engineers are the lowest paid profession in socialist paradise, so I didn't have anything, and that was very self-explanatory. But what they did to other families, that was quite telling. In front of me was a family. It was grandparents, parents, and a little girl holding a doll. She was probably 7. So the mother and the girl was brought, was taken to examination room for personal examination.
Uh-oh, we're going to have some suspense. We're bringing in suspense into We the People Radio. The news is going to cut us off.
Yes. Grab a cup of coffee and come back.
We're coming back. You've got 5 minutes of news, okay, folks. And go to wethepeopleradio.us. You can read all about our guest. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
KCNR Shasta Red.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome back to our hour two of We the People Radio. You are joining Aaron, Elizabeth, and Bob Martin. We're at KCNR 1460 Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media. If you are just joining us today, we are talking about the transition into socialism, and we are speaking with a gentleman that knows it better than anybody because he actually lived it.
Yeah, life behind the Iron Curtain. Was as bad as we all thought it was.
Yep.
Actually, this is kind of a confirmation show, a place we don't want to go.
And as he said, he came from where we're going.
Mm-hmm. So before we so rudely cut you off, because it cuts you off at 9 o'clock, you were telling us about the immigration part. You might want to just back it up a little bit for the folks that just tuned in and Arkady, tell us the story.
Well, what I was trying to describe is the situation at the small border town called Chop, C-H-O-P, and that's where I end up after my papers were given to me to exit, and I purposely omitted the time that was I was going through all kinds of paperwork, and time when I was called the enemy of the people, because I simply wanted to leave at my work. It will take another hour, and we don't have that much time left. So I would like to describe that little moment in my life when I was crossing the border. I came in the morning to this little station. There was no public toilets. It was hundreds of people. Everybody was waiting for a train to take us across. And the line was very long. There were border guards all over. And we were ushered into a customs service building. And the room was a large, empty room. Several guards were standing by the wall on the left. On the right was the bar, about 4 feet wide, was very well polished, three custom officers behind it. And when somebody approached the bar, they would open the suitcases. I had only one small briefcase, empty the pockets, put all the belongings on the bar, stuff like that. I was asked what I was doing, what was my profession. I told them I was an engineer and then explained why I didn't have much. Because engineers, doctors, and lawyers are lower-paid profession.
Really?
Whoa.
So in front of me was two families. They were treated brutally. What they would do to custom officials, they would take a suitcase, put it on its cover, upside down, and when they opened the suitcase, all the neatly packed stuff would be right there, and they would start throwing them on the floor. When I was trying to pick those up and help them, I was told if I wanted to cross the border, I better stay put and not to get involved. And so the family consisted of grandparents, husband and wife, their children, husband and wife, and the grandchild. It was the girl was about 7, I would say, holding a doll. The mother and the daughter were taken to a special room. Later on, I found out that they were personally searched and searched. I think you understand what I'm trying to say. I don't want to say it, Mayor, because it sounds so cruel to take a 7-year-old kid and put her on the gynecological chair and examine her to see if she was hiding anything.
Wow.
See what I'm saying?
And you know,
makes TSA look good.
Yeah. And as you're saying this, there's a little 8-year-old girl sitting here in the studio.
Yeah,
with
her
us.
Eyes got real
her
big.
Her eyes got really big.
We had an excellent visual for that particular.
Hey, can we do a little quick little segue? And
yeah. So I never forgave. I never forgive. So after that, if you ever saw the movie, how the mob storms the train because they were giving us only 5 minutes,
And basically the train, every train car consists of two entrances, two toilets on each side of the train car, and sleeping quarters. So people were throwing luggage through the windows. There was sheer panic. Women were yelling for children that were straying away. I was lucky. I was hanging on at the last platform of the last train car. And because the hallway in the train car was filled with luggage, everybody, and it's by design, everybody was busy taking their luggage into place, packing and unpacking, putting the luggage in the compartments and stuff like that. And I, to my surprise, the restroom was open, and I got into the restroom at the end of the last car, and I locked myself inside. The stench was unbearable, so I opened the window, and the very cold night, December air filled that room, and I saw something that nobody else saw on the train. I saw the border. The train slowly moved into a tunnel made out of barbed wire. Around it were search lights tower, machine gun towers. It was like lights like in the daytime. The time was about 10:30 p.m. It was a very nice night. It was snowing. The border guards outside was checking every compartment and every nook and cranny outside and on the top of the train just to make sure that nobody was escaping who didn't have the papers. And then the train slowly start moving, and then I realized that what the border that I was perceived as a border with the barbed wire and chain link fences and all other good stuff, machine gun towers, was a fake border.
Oh.
The after that border was a plowed land about 1 kilometer, which is about 0.7 of a mile. And then I saw the real border, same stuff, chain link fence, barbed wire, machine gun towers, searchlight. So every socialist paradise have those because the goal is to keep people in and not to let them out. It's changed in 1901 with perestroika somewhat. So it's very... I would do a poor service to the listeners if I'll try to explain what one feels when the train dives into a very cold, moonless, dark December night, and feeling of freedom and also feeling of fright because you're going into unknown, you leave everything behind you, your friends, your relationships, your family, and I couldn't sleep. I just was thinking, what's up ahead? Listening to monotonous knocking of train wheels. And then the next morning, I found myself in the Austria station. It was the same kind of weather. The day was, the date was December 7th, 1978. And ironically, December 7th was the day of the Soviet Constitution. So I'm finding myself in that railroad station, and because I didn't have anything with me, the customs didn't have much trouble with me. I went into a station hall, which was an elliptic hall. It's a rebuilt hall right now. I was in Austria not very long ago, and it's not the same anymore. But at that time, on each side of that hall was a kiosk, two of them. On the left side, one was selling tobacco products, and I was interested because I was a smoker then, and Playboy magazine. that magazine caught my eye. I was really admiring Playboy, even though I couldn't read English at that time.
Well, I don't think he needed to read Playboy.
You're like, the other side of the barbed wire is right. Really much better.
Yes, and then
it's all about the stories.
People in this country don't read the articles either.
It was a kiosk that was selling groceries, sandwiches, some sausages for travelers to take them on the train. And I was looking at that little grocery stand. I never saw anything like that in my life. 12 different types of yogurt, different kind of meats, an abundance, colors, but the most amazing to me that I saw in December, on the right side of the see-through refrigerator, I could see strawberries. And I thought to myself, it must be a fake strawberry for decoration, because in the land I came from, there is no strawberries in the winter. And I was admiring the work of the professional who could mimic the strawberries in such a great detail. I thought it was maybe paper mache or plastic or a combination of both, and all of a sudden the lady behind the counter took one strawberry and offered it to me to taste. It blew my mind. It
wow.
was the most strawberry I tasted in the wintertime. And then I came out to have my cigarette, and I saw a traffic. It was kind of a muggy snow on the streets, and I noticed the Volkswagen Golf, kind of light gray and light green in color, was approaching and driving very slow by me. The driver, I see him like it was yesterday. It was a very distinguished-looking gentleman. He was gray hair, probably about 50. He was wearing a red turtleneck sweater and a tweed jacket. His hands were in the leather gloves. He was holding a cigarette, and he was looking intently at me. And as I exhaled the smoke from my cigarette, and I look him in the eye, and I made myself a promise. One day, I will look exactly like you, because I was quite an exhibit. I had my fur hat on, my very heavy coat on. I wasn't looking in the place. I was totally out of place. And that's why I made that promise, that I will look like you. And that's where my other half of my life began.
So, wow. Okay, we've got to... That's a perfect little break spot while we digest that. I think that's amazing after all those years though, you can remember a strawberry. And we all have those kind of memories.
And I went to the farmer's market yesterday and bought a whole basket, and Sarah and I just polished it off in 5 minutes.
Hey, Bob's telling you to shut up. Bob's telling us to shut up.
All right.
All right, we'll be back with you. We're at KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
Follow the Moskva. Down to Gonky Park, listening to the wind of change. August summer night, soldiers passing by, listening to the wind of change.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
Dominance.
Yeah, there you go.
Submission.
Dominance.
Submission.
Dominance.
Submission.
I was just having
we were just listening. We're just sitting here listening.
Just having a little chat with my niece. She is half Russian. Her mom came to America from Kazakhstan about 12 or 15 years ago. And so she was trying to teach me how to say grandma and grandpa in Russian correctly. And I was pretty bad. So she was making fun of
me. Laughing. Her Cody's like, yeah,
she's
right.
She's really enjoying the show because you sound like her mom. A male version of her mom.
I mean that in the nicest way.
I mean that in the nicest way possible.
I was going to say, she should quit smoking.
You know, I was just telling...
Oh, does she
smoke? No, I was telling. Okay. I was telling Aaron when we first came on this morning that my sister-in-law came to this country legally and took her 7 years to get her U.S. citizenship, and I went with her to Sacramento to the immigration office where she took an oath and became a U.S. citizen, but she was a little disappointed that she knew more about how the U.S. government works than most people that live here. What do you think about that?
Well, it's when I was taking my oath of citizenship, it was December 31st, 1985, and it's also similar to your relative that it took me about 6 years from the time I arrived here. I had to go through a test, and the test was very rugged and very simple. I was asked who was our first president was, and I didn't think that people didn't know. I assumed that this test is simple enough so anybody can answer. And then I realized that it's not necessarily so. When I start speaking English more fluently, and I was talking to my buddies in the hood, I realized that there's a lot of people, because they're in certain circumstances, finding themselves in certain circumstances, they are not aware or they don't want to be aware. There's several friends of mine that were living a life without questioning anything. And that's probably a good thing when you're free, when you don't have to think about certain things. But not necessarily. I don't buy the idea that everybody has to be all-knowing and being aware of everything. It's always better to have an educated public. But the reality of this lies that people are busy making a living, and sometimes they don't have time to self-education. And that's one of the things that I talk about in my lectures, that you're always better off educating yourself and trying to find out the answers. But those people are far few in between. That's the reality of our lives today. And it's very easy to point out, hey, this guy doesn't know this thing, and this guy doesn't know this thing, but I know, and therefore, hey, look at me, I'm better. No, it's an interesting process, and I started learning, and I started studying because I want to know. And I want to know how one becomes a slave, how one becomes subordinate to other. So it started when I was in the military. I had a friend. He was a soldier. I was an officer. But he asked me a very interesting question as we were walking from the commissary to the barracks. He asked me, Arkady, how does one control people? And I was stunned that here we were in the most controlling institution, which is the military, in the most controlling country called Soviet Union. And here's the guy who wants to control others. And I didn't have an answer then, and I told him honestly, I don't know. And that was it. But from that point on, I started to read anything I could get my hands on. What is the process? Why someone would like to control the other? What tricks that? How does it happen? And I still don't know many answers. I read a lot on the subject, and I cannot say definitively, yes, this is the way it is. No, I can't, because I don't know enough. And who knows if I ever find the answer. But that's an interesting subject, and it's something that started me to read certain books like Plato Republic. I start to read books of Cicero. And this is something that happened from that point on. The year was 1971. And especially when I came to Austria and I filled out my paperwork. And then I went to Italy because Italy was kind of, Rome, Italy was a processing center where immigrants, like Ellis Island, so to speak, when immigrants will come and they would decide which country they would like to go to. There were seven countries that would accept us. Those countries were United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, and the seventh, South Africa, New Zealand, there was another, Israel. And you had to go to a certain embassy to file those papers. And I found a job in Rome. I worked three jobs, making 500 milliliters. I was there for a year. And the reason I didn't get my visa sooner, because they were looking at me a little bit more carefully, and rightfully so, because here I was. I was 31 years of age. I was an officer in the Army, master's degree. Guys like me would probably will get a little bit more special attention, and I think it's the right thing to do. It was the right thing to do to them, and it's the right thing to do today. And so it just happened that I found this Russian library in Rome that was tended by nuns. It was supported by Tolstoy Fund, Leo Tolstoy, the writer who was author of War and Peace. And I came to that library, and I asked the nun, look, I would like to read. I don't have much time. I work three jobs, but I would like to start reading stuff that I was not allowed to read in back home. She kind of looked at me, smiled, and said, how about Bible? I said, you see, I'm Jewish, and I don't think the Bible is the book for me. She said, you're wrong. Did you know that Old Testament and Torah is the same book? So that was the start of my education. And I didn't know I was growing up in a secular nation where the religion was totally destroyed and was only for the show. And I didn't know that simple fact that Book of Torah and Old Testament the same.
And what religion was it? Like, when you were a kid, did you go to church?
No. There was a church, and I went with my friend. It was a Russian Orthodox church, but most of the Orthodox churches, the priest was forced by the KGB to inform them of things like when you're coming to talk to a priest about some private matter, he had to write a report.
What? So that's relaxing.
Basically, there were a lot of sects that, for instance, Baptists were underground sect. They were not allowed. The evangelical Christians, they were not allowed to the religion was and is today controlled by the state. And therefore, nothing has changed today. And if I will have time, I'll talk about it in a few minutes. But my thought is that was the time when I started educating myself because I wanted to. Because I wanted to understand what makes this country so great.
All right. And on that note, Bob's got some good music queued up for us. We'll be back with you in 2 minutes. We get to thank our advertisers. We're here at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
99 Decision Street, 99 ministers meet to worry, worry, super scary. College swoops out in a hurry. This is what we've waited for. This is advice. This is war. The president is on the line. It's 99 Revolution.
That sounds like an Occupy song. Hey, welcome back to We the People Radio.
Anything that is 99. And
I know.
Except for what about Agent 99?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah,
perfect.
She wasn't an occupier.
Hey, so cool.
99 Red Balloons.
Yeah,
oh,
sorry.
There you
we
go.
Digress.
99. Don't forget 99 Beers on the Wall.
That's a
yeah, that
song.
Wasn't an occupier. Well, that was kind of an occupier song. Could
kinda,
be an occupier song.
Kind of, yeah.
It's hard to
kind of sounds like it. Hey, so we've got a lot of folks in the chat room that are asking what you see in this country now that leads you to believe that we're heading to what you came from. And you had mentioned to Aaron the term socialist nirvana. And I just wanted to make the statement that...
You don't want to go there?
No,
besides that.
But people came here to get freedom, so where are we going to go? Yeah.
Well, there's several cornerstones that are required in order to establish the total control of the populace. Number one, it's the destruction of religious beliefs and destruction of the family as a unit. Without that, it's impossible to subdue a person. That's why majority of people who subscribe to socialist ideas and true ideology of socialism are not religious. And that's one of the most important things that a tyrant has to do, is to destroy the morality of the society and destroy the religious institutions. And number two, in order to achieve that, it's a gradual process. One has to change the educational system, take control over the information that disseminated in before in the good old days where Russian Bolsheviks and Mensheviks, they took control of the press. That was the prerequisite. That's number three. Number four, confiscation of all weapons. And number five, it's basically mold the individual as a brick instead of a stone. In fact, everybody has to be equal. But it's also, it only applies to a majority of the population, except the very small group of elite. And the main ideology that arose to serfdom is the statist. The statist is the person who worships the state.
Oh.
And where you believe that the state will protect you, will house you, will feed you, and do all this thing for you. And the best thing to read about this type of a process is to take a Communist Manifesto and read the point after point. And they just, it's a recipe for cooking this nirvana or cooking this utopia. You can call it utopianism, whatever you want to call it, but after the equal sign, you have tyranny. And that's basically what I see. I see gradual destruction of the church and our moral values. I see a movement to abolish the Second Amendment, and it comes not only from our politicians, but a lot of sheriffs and other law enforcement officials. You have a destruction of our educational system. It started in the 1900s with Mr. Dewey, and it's not actually a coincidence that it started at that time. That's where the disease called socialism was spreading around Europe and the United States. So all of this I can see here taking hold. And that's a food for concern. We also see Islamization of certain areas where the radical Islam taking hold because, in my opinion,
like Minnesota,
takes hold simply because the Christianity is becoming so weak that the vacuum that created is filled with fanaticals on the Muslim side. It's not a coincidence that Europe, that in my opinion screwed up much more than we are here, is populated with Islamists, and they're losing their culture and they're losing their grip on freedoms as a result. You're talking about Norway, you're talking about France, you're talking about Germany. Germany a little better off, but not that much. A lot of people that are traveling to Europe think that European is continent is something to model after. I would yell on the top of my lung and say, no, 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 don't go there. It's not the place you want to be. Because a lot of our officials are going to Europe with their dollars in their pockets, and they think that it's wonderful to go to Paris and see the Eiffel Tower and visit the Louvre, but if you go a little bit outside of Paris and you see the slums, then it's not that pretty. So what I see is the gradual kind of boiling of a soup where we unfortunately acting as frogs and we don't see the temperature rising. And a lot of us started to wake up, and that's why I so applaud and a proud member of the Tea Party.
You know, I was just going to ask you that.
Because we have, as a public, we have to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is still the greatest country on earth, and we just have to preserve it.
So if we did lose our freedom, where would we go?
Well, the first thing, it will be rehabilitation of the young, the destruction of the old. You will start seeing concentration camps. You will start seeing the school curriculum that is uniform throughout the country. The total propaganda thing and stuff, where the books will be not available. The information will not be available. You are totally in fear of your life and well-being if you're not conforming. So this is what can happen. In Russia, for instance, if you live in an apartment, in your passport, there's a little stamp with your address. You cannot leave that apartment on your own free will and move to another apartment.
You can't?
It's called Propiska. Yes. You can't, you cannot go and travel. And I remember my first business trip. I went for more than 3 years. I had to report to the local police department and tell them that I'm here. This is my traveling papers. I'm an engineer, came to this factory, and the police knew where I was. You talking about development of a lot of snitching and snitchers at your workplace, that we'll basically forget about freedom of expression and freedom of religion. And the when you're a priest in Russian Orthodox Church and you have a visit from the KGB man, and that guy tells you that we congratulate you on your appointment. But here's the thing you have to do. When you have certain confessions, we would like to write what you talk about. And you cannot disobey because you are not going to be a priest in that. So it's amazing to comprehend. I can't comprehend someone who is so torn between serving God and serving another side. You can't.
No, no.
And yet, it was. So where are we heading? We're not heading in a good direction. And it pains me to see this wonderful ship called United States sailing to the place I came from.
Yeah, that's got to be just downright spooky. Huh? That's got to be just downright spooky.
You probably scratch your head and say, I can't believe this is happening again.
Exactly. It's like life in reverse. We've got to take a really quick break or we'll be up against the top of the hour again. We need to thank our advertisers. We'll be back. We are speaking about life behind the Iron Curtain and what that has to do with all of us here in the United States. So anyway, food for thought. You're listening to WeThePeopleRadio.us at KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
Hear us streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
And if there comes a time, guns and gays no longer hold you in. And if you're free to make a choice, just look towards the west and find a friend. Nakita, you will never know anything about my home. I'll never know how good it feels to hold you. Oh, Nakita, I need you so.
Welcome back. We're wrapping up our hour.
Nakita,
gonna chat a little bit more. Probably got about 10 minutes. How do you want to wrap this up? You want to talk a little bit about what we can do to keep from going
what
back to where
do,
you're from?
I can tell you that the only way to battle the evils is to get involved. And I urge any listeners of this station and other stations that you have to get involved if you want to change things. And that's the fundamental way of being free. Freedom is not to do what you want all the time. Freedom is 100% responsibility. What I mean by that, when you look yourself in the mirror in the morning and you're saying to yourself that from this point on, everything I do and everything that happens in my life, it's my doing. I'm responsible for it. There is nobody else to blame. And that's the thought of a free man. On the other scale is the thought of the slave man who blames somebody else for his or her misfortune. He blames Obama or Senator Biden or Vice President Biden or Banking Committee or Federal Reserve Act. But we are the people who allow it to happen. we are the ones that are responsible and to change things. One has to realize that you are in control of your life still, and you can preserve it by getting involved. I would start with involvement in the local politics, being in the planning commission, city council, especially in the school board. Everything starts locally. And that's joining Tea Party, for instance, getting active and not to be afraid of doing something and not to be afraid of speaking out. The other component of a free man, that life of a free man is void of any kind of quote-unquote security. You are the only security you possess. It cannot be given to you by the government. And life of a free man is void of fear, because in any religion, inclusive of Judaism and Christianity, fear is one of the major sins. It's a cradle of all evil. And this is what one can do. And that's one, what we must do is to get involved. And that's why I'm on the planning commission here in the city. I'm talking to you on the radio any chance I get. I write articles. And I'm trying to tell people, hey, it doesn't matter what kind of a diploma you have on your wall or how much you know or you don't know. You can learn. You can educate yourself. And you can change things. That's why I'm so optimistic. I think we're going to overcome it. That's what I think.
Wow. And you've been there, because everybody else is like, we're doomed.
It's too late.
We spend a lot of time hearing from, we're doomed.
So yeah. No.
Kind of nice to hear the other side.
Yeah, it is.
There is a very distinctive difference between, let me give you an example. I was just drinking my coffee and sitting in the sun at the, of all places, Starbucks. And I was reading my book, and there was two young people, a man and a woman. They were probably in their 20s. And what caught my ear, I couldn't help but to listen to their conversation. They were close to me. And he was describing to her why he refused a job. And he used the word, you know what they did? They offered me a slave wage of $10 an hour. And I thought to myself, wow, you're already a slave, but you don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is the guy who was speaking English with terrific grammatical errors. Who was expecting to be in the corner office of some high scraper working for six-figure income. And it would never occur to him that he could create a job for himself instead of waiting for somebody to offer him a job. And that's what's wrong with our society. When we are depriving ourselves of our freedom by suspecting or expecting someone will come up with a job. And that someone will offer you a job that you deserve, but you will not get off your fanny and wouldn't do anything about anything to improve your life. That's how we enslave ourselves. When you rely on somebody else, I can give you another example. I was, when I was appointed to be a planning commissioner, I was sent to a training of planning commissioners, and I was witnessing a horrific ideological brainwash that were presented to the planning commissioners, and I realized that it was an Agenda 21 stuff. And when the three presenters were done, I stood up and I gave them a piece of my mind. I told them, you guys are nuts. I hope you will re-examine your heads. And I gave them item by item why. And there were some thunderous applause from the half of the audience. Half of the audience was sitting quietly. But the most horrible thing happened when I and my friend, another planning commissioner, we were leaving. And we were chased by two young guys. Those guys happened to be attorneys. And they shook our hands and they said, Arkady, this was a very courageous thing that just said. And I thought, and I told him, I said, no, I didn't say anything courageous. I was spoken my mind. So I had two young attorneys that's supposed to work on property rights issues that they were electing to sit quietly through the whole thing and let somebody else do their jobs. So my plea to your audience, please, please, please don't wait. Because you can find yourself in the prison cell if you don't. Don't wait. Don't wait somebody to do this thing for you. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to get up and do what's right. Speaking up your mind, working the precincts, walking the precincts, trying to elect guys and ladies who you think will represent you, really,
mm-hmm.
instead of sitting in the comfort of your home, thinking that somebody else will do this thing for you, or the most obnoxious thing that I've heard from someone telling me that, oh, Arkady, I'm not voting because my vote doesn't matter. Yes, it does.
Yeah, so, that's just offensive.
Yes, and basically, this is what I see. I see a deterioration of the society because of passiveness of the public, because of our politicians are rotten to the core. They're on both sides of the aisle. And I am a registered Republican for many, many years, since I became a citizen in 85. But I can see that we have to do some readjustment. And we have a wonderful manual to do that. It's called the Constitution.
Yeah.
And yet, we have our officials trumping Constitution at all times. Look at the Supreme Court's Kelo decision or other decisions that they rendered. Separation of church and state because of Hugo Black, who was a Supreme Court justice. We're talking about our both houses. But the main thing that we have to do is to eventually abolish 16th, 17th, Amendment of the Constitution and the Federal Reserve Act. And that's a different topic. I would love to talk about Federal Reserve. It's my favorite thing. I studied since 98. But without those three, I don't think we have a prayer. And we have to work towards it, and we have to applaud people who start talking about it. Because in the 17th Amendment, we had before 1913, all our senators were appointed, but their state legislature and sent to Washington. When they started to elect them publicly, they yanked the teeth of the state powers, and that's where we lost our representative republic, in my opinion. This is my personal opinion. I'm not professor. I'm not the
teacher. We have to thank you and run away. Because,
see, did that 2 hours not just fly by?
Of course it does. Well, and everybody wants you to come up and visit, so you now have an open invite to come to Reading. Thank you so much.
Yes, it's been absolutely wonderful.
Arkady Fakhtorovich, and I kind of screwed that up, but I'm not Russian. So,
you're doing great, and I appreciate your cheerfulness. And
oh, we're cheerful.
Wonderful. Yeah, you're cheerful, yes, and that's wonderful.
All right, we will see you guys next week on We the People Radio. Check us out on the web, wethepeopleradio.us.
Thank you, Arkady and Aaron and Elizabeth, KCNR, Shasta, Reading.